Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, again, I have no comments today, and I think that's a good thing. So what I want to do, I want to just jump right back into chapter one and continue where I left off. I'm so fascinated by this subject, I lost track of time, and my poor producer, he was just enthralled too, and so we got stuck. But last time I said you need to know the geography and of the Middle East if you're going to know the greatness of the story and what Lawrence was able to accomplish as a young British fellow raised in green environment, raised with water, raised around all these beautiful things, and he went into the desert. I mean, deep into the desert. So remember, the Middle Eastern desert is, it's incredible. It is a hostile environment. I mean, we have some desert cultures in the United States where people live and they have, major cities. You look at Arizona, look at parts of California. But you have to be a unique individual to be able to survive the deserts of the Middle East. This is page 23 of that chapter 1. And remember, this chapter 1 title is, Who is this extraordinary pipsqueak? And so, really, the more you read about Lawrence, the more you see that he was just an amazing, amazing person. So here's the bottom of the page, talking about the hostile environment of the Middle East, the Middle Eastern deserts. It says, empty, vast, and unprofitable as the desert looked to Europeans, every barren square foot of it, every wadi, every steep rocky hill, every sparse patch of thorn brush, every well, however disgusting the water, was claimed by some tribe or person and would be defended to the death against trespassers. Nor was the desert a romantic, endless landscape of wind-blown sand dunes. Much of it was jagged, broken, black volcanic rock as sharp as a razor, and fields of hardened lava that even camels had difficulty crossing. Steep valleys zigzagged to nowhere. Towering, knife-edged hills rose from the sand. Flat patches of beached, glassy sand, the size of some European countries, reflected the harsh sunlight like a vast mirror at 125 degrees Fahrenheit or more, and stretched to the horizon, broken only by sudden sandstorms appearing out of nowhere. Except for remote areas where a green fuzz of short, rough grass in the brief rainy season was counted as rich pasturage for the great herds of camels that were the principal source of wealth for the Bedouin tribes. This was the landscape, or close to it, of Cain and Abel, of Joseph sold into slavery by his brothers, of Job. It was not a safe or kindly place to be. And this is where, T.E. Lawrence, one day he went into the desert and he came back later, a hero. And I'm not suggesting that you go into the desert to become a hero, but certainly he did. And it's the one thing that about this section I just read to you, it's Korda is talking about Hejaz. And this is the same thing that I read you a quote from Mr. Armstrong last time. And what the Hejaz is, it's a part of, the Arabian Desert where the holy places of Islam are. Of course, it starts further south at Mecca. Then there's Medina. And then the third holy city that is so important to the Islamic peoples is Jerusalem. And remember, Mr. Armstrong said, there are three religions that claim Jerusalem. And, of course, there's two nations that also claim Jerusalem. That's the Jews and the Arabic peoples. That is part of the tension. And when Lawrence, remember, his main job was to find the right leader to unite the tribes. That's what he was after. And he was only 28, but he was such a great, he had a great skill in reading the character of people. And he knew they needed just the right man to do the job. And so he decided, and if you read through the chapter, you'll find out, he decided he needed to go into the Hejaz. He needed to go in and really look at these Bedouin tribes to find the leader. And that would have put him in great, great danger. And the number one reason why is he was a Christian. He came from a Christian community. He came from a Christian nation. He was considered, you know, a Christian soldier. And immediately, if he would have gone in near the Hejaz, and that's this whole, and if you get out a map, you can see it. And if you even type in Hejaz, it's H-E-J-A-Z. If you type that in and look online, it'll show you where this part of the desert is. It's the most holy place, and really it's like the holy place for Christianity, which is Jerusalem, certainly Bethlehem, because that's where Christ was born. But all these, that the city of Jerusalem, especially the old city, is really important to the Middle East. It's really important to the Palestinians today. And, of course, we know, even from Bible prophecy, they're going to take half the city, and that is going to be the spark that ignites World War III when they take half of Jerusalem. Now, I just want to read you know, the danger of, let's say, that Lawrence was going to put himself in by going into the Hejaz. And even some of the Arabic peoples were concerned for him, because I guess there is one aspect of, you know, Arabic culture or the Arabic state of mind is, you know, the blood feud. And of course, if you remember, if you go back into your Bible and you look at Ishmael, I mean, Ishmael was a violent fighter, and even Jacob's son Esau was a hunter, and you know, he was very violent, and you know, he wanted to obviously, you know, kill his brother for taking his birthright. And so here, to send Lawrence in there was really, really putting his life at risk. But as it says, as Korda tells us, that Lawrence worked on himself all his life to not be afraid of dangerous things. You know, he really could control his fear. So this is the bottom of page 16 now. And it's talking about even these, the emirs, Emir Ali, Emir Faisal, and Sharif Hussein, they all hesitated to allow Lawrence to go in to the Hejaz, I guess. And this is the bottom of page 16. It says, the hesitation was less from a desire to prevent this inquisitive and well-informed young Englishman from observing the real state of the Sharif's armies in the field, though this thought may have crossed Abdullah's mind, than from the sensible fear that once Lawrence was out of Jeddah, as a European and Christian, he was very likely to be murdered, or that in his khaki uniform he could be mistaken for a Turkish officer and murdered on that account. So there was already bad feelings there between the Arabic peoples and the Turkish officers, even though, you know, they have a similar heritage. There were still bad feelings. And, you know, in some ways you can understand it. They wanted to control Mecca themselves. They wanted to control Medina themselves. And they certainly want control of Jerusalem. And they still want control of it today. That is the tinderbox. It says, on Storr's first trip to the Hejaz in 1914, one of the Sharif's aides had offered to sell him for £1 the severed heads of seven Germans who had been murdered that week in the hinterland. And strong feelings on the subject of infidels near the holy places had not lessened since among the Bedouin, despite the fact that the British and the French were now their allies. And so, remember now, the Germans were allies with the Turkish soldiers that were in control of the Middle East at that time. And so the Arabic peoples did not like the Germans, and they executed them. And so can you imagine, what would they do if they found a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Brit or British man, and in the Hejaz or close to their holy sites? Now, listen to this. It says, such stories as these merely spurred Lawrence on. So he was not afraid. He had a very strong will. And he says, it is unclear from the somewhat conflicting accounts of Storrs and Lawrence why Storrs was willing to deploy on Lawrence's behalf his considerable powers of persuasion against the Sharif to make possible a journey of considerable danger that, so far as he knew, nobody in Cairo had ordered or authorized Lawrence to make, but very likely he bowed to what he already recognized was a stronger will. And so Lawrence knew. He had to see these men. He had to see them personally. He had to know of their character. He had to know who was going to be the one organizing the tribes so that they could help bring down the Ottoman Empire. So let me just go on here now with the rest of this paragraph. He said, besides, nobody at Jeddah or in Cairo seemed to know what was going on at Rabagh, let alone in the desert beyond it. And Lawrence's proposal to go and find out for himself may have seemed daring, but sensible. As for Lawrence, he did not bother asking permission. He simply sent a telegram to Clayton that began, meeting today, Wilson, Storrs, Sharif Abdallah, Aziz al-Marsi, and myself. Nobody knows real situation at Rabagh, so much time wasted. Aziz al-Marsi going to Rabagh with me tomorrow. And then Cordes says, so began the adventure. And so Lawrence did have this strong mind. And he knew that a certain job had to be done. And if it put his life in danger, so be it. He was going to get the job done. And I do think that is one quality of leadership that we have to face and we have to make sure we incorporate into our lives. And I know there's even a section in the Bible right before Christ was executed where he wanted to go back to Jerusalem, and the disciples said, yeah, but they want to kill you there. But yet Christ felt that God the Father wanted him to go back there. He had a mission back there. So he said, well, whatever happens, happens. I'm going to do what God the Father wants. And so Lawrence had that skill of, having that strong will. And, it is interesting that even people that studied Lawrence, even when he was working, let's say in the Middle East. Now, there's some other things I want to bring out probably in a later program about him, especially before we get out of this pipsqueak chapter. He personally did work at irritating people. He was a little bit eccentric. He was really different. But even the Arabic peoples really began to like him. And here's one of the things about him that the Arabic people notice. It says, this is page 16 again in the middle of the page. It says, no doubt Abdullah, who behind a jovial and good-natured facade was a shrewd judge of men, divined something of Lawrence's reservations about him, both in Wilson's hot little room at the consulate and later on, in Abdullah's sumptuously appointed tent outside Jeddah. So Lawrence looked at Abdullah, and he's wondered if he's a leader, and he realized he wasn't. He didn't have enough force of character. He says, the interior of his tent was decorated with brightly colored silk-embroidered birds, flowers, and texts from the Quran. It was placed near the Green Dome Shrine that was reputed to be the burial place of Mother Hawa, as Muslims called Eve, where Abdullah had pitched his camp in hope of avoiding the fever that was reported in town. He may have also been sensitive enough to guess that young Lawrence was not only a potential man of action, but something even more dangerous, a man of destiny. And so here's an Arabic man being examined by Lawrence, and here he's examining Lawrence, and even this Arabic man knew that he was a man of destiny, that he was destined to do something great. And I think it's important that we think about Lawrence in connection with Winston Churchill. And Winston Churchill knew that he was also a man destined to do great things. And so, again, even as a young boy, Lawrence really, really wanted to be a hero. He wanted to do great things. And again, I think as we go through this book, we're going to see that he was prepared for these kind of things. Now, again, even though it was very dangerous for him to be inside the Hejaz, and again, I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. Maybe I'll have to get on a online and find out how to actually say that. But Lawrence really had a skill for fitting in. And I think Corder brings this out really well in the book. So in other words, when he was traipsing around the deserts on camels, and he was wearing the natural clothing of the Bedouins, he fit in. And it's just an amazing skill. And I think it's something that was just part of his genius. Let me just read this. This is page 25. And Lawrence is actually on his way into the Hejaz. And they stop at a well. And there was a tribe that was known, the Harbs, I guess they're called. They were known to be pretty violent. And I think I mentioned above about the idea of blood feuds. And I guess that's one thing about the Arabic tribes that were really was really pretty a downside to their character, is if they ever had anger with another tribe, they would usually just murder each other. And they would keep these feuds going on. And certainly, if they would find an infidel or a Christian at one of their wells, they'd probably just murder them on the spot. So, look at this paragraph. This is the bottom of page 25, talking about Lawrence's skill of fitting in. It says, Lawrence seemed to have attracted no attention, even when a group of Harb tribesmen driving a large herd of camels arrived, followed perhaps more dangerously by two richly dressed young men riding thoroughbred camels, a sheriff and his cousin disguised as a master and servant to pass through the country of a hostile tribe undisturbed. So even the Arabic tribes had to be careful of this Harb tribe. So this pair might have at least been expected to express some curiosity about the presence of a stranger as well, but Lawrence seemed to have possessed a natural gift for remaining silent and motionless without betraying himself. He had always been fearless. From boyhood on, he had deliberately cultivated indifference to danger and hardship, as well as emotional independence, as if rehearsing for the role he was about to play, and his lack of fear somehow communicated itself to others in the sense that they felt that he belonged wherever he was, whoever he might be. Now, that's amazing. That's an amazing skill. And you can see that if you're going to be working with these Arabic tribes, you've got to appear like you're one of them. And here's what Corda goes on to say. It says, in some ways, this was more effective than a vulgar disguise. The real Lawrence was actually less noticeable than if he had tried to darken his skin and pretend to be an Arab, like Sandy Arbuthnot, a character in John Buchanan's classic adventure novel Green Mantle, who many believe was based in part on Lawrence. It was something of a skill, the equivalent of camouflage or protective coloration. As a junior staff officer, Lawrence had sat unnoticed among vastly more senior officers in meetings where he had no business to be, without attracting attention to his presence until he spoke, at which point he usually dominated the conversation, and he did the same among the Bedouin. So, to me, that sounds a lot like Winston Churchill. And so there's just these genius guys that have these great abilities. And he was really cut out for the job that needed to be done. And I think we can see, it's almost like if you look at Churchill, you know, God was working in the background with him so that he could save Western society in World War II. And then also, it looks like God was working with T.E. Lawrence as well as Winston Churchill at the same time to put the Middle East in the situation or maybe in the configuration that it is today. And so, how great is that? And you can see, even Mr. Stephen Fleury was talking on the Trumpet Daily a couple days ago, that God looks for these people. Maybe it wasn't the Trumpet Daily. Maybe it was in his epistles class. I've been taking Mr. Stephen Fleury's Epistles of Paul class as well. And he was talking about Paul. Paul had these incredible skills. And that, even though he was out there persecuting the church, you know, Christ was examining him because he had a zeal. And certainly, if you're going to take the gospel to the Gentiles, and which would have a lot of anti-Jewish feeling, and which have a lot of, Christ was a Jew. He did bring the gospel to the Jews, and now it was time to take it to the Gentiles. The Jews resisted it, so how much would the Gentiles have resisted Paul? And so, it's just God is looking for these men that are, they're really kind of like, fearless. They see a job needs to be done, and they have this laser focus on that job. And so Lawrence certainly had the skill. The other thing about Lawrence that I think we need to understand is Lawrence knew the Arabic mind and thought, and he loved the Arabic people. He was not a racist. He didn't treat himself like he was better than they were, or that they were Arab like desert rats. I mean, he would never treat them that way. He had respect for them. And he had a respect for their culture and their way of doing things. And, he really was able to work with them. Even when he's traveling into the Hejaz, the one of the things that the Turkish people did is, which really disturbed the Arabic Bedouin tribes that, let's say, between the cities of Mecca and Medina, they put in this railroad. And supposedly in Islam, when you're traveling from, let's say, Mecca to Medina to Jerusalem, this is supposed to be a holy pilgrimage. Now, and they expected to either walk or go on camels. But the Turkish came in and they put this modern railroad track in, and that really disturbed the tribes. And essentially, there's probably two sides of that. It took away from the spiritual effort of doing this, pilgrimage, but it also probably hurt the Bedouins financially because they couldn't rent the camels out to people doing the pilgrimage. And so there was probably, an economic thing there as well, but also it appears like maybe they even robbed and pillaged each other at the same time. But let me just read this paragraph, and then we're rushing here to the end of this program as well. So here Lawrence is in the Hejaz, he's heading to see this great emir in there. And he says, Lawrence's mind was on the fact that the path they were following was the traditional route by which pilgrims traveled from Medina to Mecca. Indeed, in the Hejaz, a large part of the Arabs' feeling against the Turks came from building the railway from Damascus to Medina. Since the Bedouin earned money by providing guides, camels, and tented camps for the pilgrims along the desert route, and also from robbery and shameless extortion at their expense. It was the local Bedouins' ferocious hostility to this modern encroachment that had so far prevented the Turks from building a planned 280-mile extension of the railway from Medina all the way to Mecca. Lawrence, as his camel paced in the moonlight from the flat sand of the coast into the rough going of scrub-covered sand dunes, marred by potholes and tangled roots, meditated on the fact that the Arab revolt, in order to succeed, would have to follow the pilgrim road in reverse, as he was doing, moving north towards Syria and Damascus, bringing faith in Arab nationalism and an Arab nation that they advanced as the pilgrims brought their faith in Islam yearly to Mecca. And so there, he understood the Arabic mind. Well, that's all I have today, and we're going to continue our discussion of chapter one. There is a lot in there. It's 50 pages, and if you can read this, get it done, and it's going to just open up the door for us to read a lot more exciting things in this book. So next time, I'll continue my discussion of chapter one. And remember, for this current series of programs, we're using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a good used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library if they have the book. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.